Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Bissell.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Bissell.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Bissell.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, buckle up, folks. Here we go. 2 hours as we get you set for Monday Night Football's return to Jacksonville. Hopefully the outcome is considerably different than last year, 30-3. Brian Sexton along with John Osher, Tony Bisselli, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato. You know the numbers. I'll repeat them anyway. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351.
That's to reach me.
Exactly. You want to talk to Bisselli, you tweet him. It's at Tony Bisselli. Osher, he can go either way. You can call him or you can talk on the phone.
Email, Ozone.
Exactly, at Ozone Right. Whatever you want. At John Osher, exactly.
Cheap plug.
At
Cheap
Jags
plug.
Voice. And
Cheap
we'll,
plug.
We'll get all of those things covered tonight from every single angle. Big news today, Terrell Owens is back on the market, ladies
Woo-hoo!
And gentlemen. In a week in which they bring Mike Sims-Walker back, who's for bringing T.O. to town for a workout? Seriously, he was clear.
You got your serious answer right there.
I know. He was clear. I don't know what to say. He was clear today. And Drew Rosenhaus is tweeting that if someone signs him today, he could play on Sunday.
Well, good for Drew.
When did he – didn't he tear his ACL in the offseason, like April?
Yeah. Was it April?
Yeah, it was in the offseason. And, you know, the amazing thing is that, you know, what was just a few weeks ago, supposedly –
he was in Korea.
Well, no. And then after that, there was supposedly a 911 call.
Yeah, some sort of
– to his place for him.
Like an overdose or something?
Yeah,
or some,
I don't know.
Some deal.
That's the second time something like that's happened with T.O.
I don't know what it was, but I read the same story. There was some – maybe it wasn't him. Maybe it was a family member, but there was some medical issue.
Tomorrow, each one of us will be met by some brain donor who says, hey, they have to sign him.
You know what all we got to say is –
he's 38 years old.
It doesn't matter.
All we have
to
say to that –
four people that will say something to us.
Simple answer. Chopper City Juke is back, as Ron Robinson would say.
That's right.
Do you know what that is, Tony?
No, I have no idea.
You know the dance?
Oh, yeah.
Mike Sims-Walker end zone dance?
Well, plus, correct me if I'm wrong. If he tore this thing in April, you know, Tony, not to blow smoke, but, you know, you came back and made the Pro Bowl 8 months after tearing your ACL.
Yeah, but that was based on previous years. I mean,
well, whatever. He still started 16 games.
That's crazy.
And played.
I did play 16 games, yes.
He played a solid left tackle.
I'll hang on this side.
And that was remarkable. I mean, it truly was.
I mean,
it was quick.
But I'll say this: I came back in 8 months and started every game. But for the first,
you weren't saying
seven. It was a battle, struggle.
Right.
I got through the bye week and then started playing. Then I played much. I played well the second half.
Now
of the season.
Let me ask you this, because you know this kind of goes to T.O. and it also goes to some of the conversation that we'll have about Aaron Kampman today. 7 weeks, you said, right? Till you got to the bye.
Yeah.
How many months post-op was that for you?
I've been 9.5.
Nine, right.
No, I'm talking to where you
– 9.5.
It would have been 9.5 months to where you felt normal again?
I played at 8 months, and the first 5, 6, 7 weeks, number one, my such bad tendonitis in my knee because it wasn't all the way back strong, and it hurt. I had no power on the run game. I could pass block fine. And then I rested the entire bye and did not practice at all. And then the second half I felt good. I felt like I could play normal football. But it was a struggle that first. I remember we played Cincinnati, I think, the second or third game of that year. And I had an iso block where I had to drive just a five technique, which I'd done a number of times.
Five technique for those don't know, just an outside shade defensive line.
Yeah, just very basic block. And I fired off, and I felt like I hit a wall. And this wasn't against a great player. Hit a wall, and I couldn't move. And I was trying to move my feet, and I was like, wow, that's not very much fun. But I also am of the opinion there's certain positions, and I think offensive line's one of them. You have to play hurt.
Yeah.
You have to play through pain. You have to play when you're not 100%. Now, and I knew at that point, and later in my career when I got to my shoulders where it was I couldn't even play at 50%, then you know that's when it's time. But there's – in this league, you have to play hurt. You have to play with pain. You have to play when you're not 100% and fight through it and figure out how to play at a high enough level. Now, there's certain positions where you just can't do it, and there's certain injuries you can't fight through. But if it's tendonitis, if there's you know, even, I mean, for a year and a half, my shoulder went in and out, but it was manageable because I could get the strength back quick enough during the game. And you just got to – and, Jeff, you know the same thing. I mean,
yeah, I dealt
you
with
played
that.
You played through shoulder and knee injuries, and, I mean, you weren't out there 100% every time, but
no.
You figure out how to play.
I wish I was.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it would have been great, but you figure out how to play, and you go through it. And you,
right.
And but yeah, back to how this started, T.O., I can't imagine. And I was 28, 29.
He's 38.
At 38?
Yeah.
No.
At a wide receiver position where you have to explode, change direction. I mean, it's a waste of a conversation. I mean, why would you sign him?
He needs the money.
No, why would you sign him if you're a – no, I'm saying, but if you were a team.
No, I know, but I mean, as far as his reasoning, I mean, there's
sure.
reports out right. there that I've read that T.O.'s financial issues aren't exactly in order.
Well,
then, which is amazing.
I don't.
Yeah, because he's made a lot of money.
I don't blame him for wanting to play. I don't fault him at all. Go for it. If you can get away with it. And
I can't
it.
Imagine anyone would sign him, though.
I can't
for
either.
All the reasons that we just talked about. I just wanted to get it out of the way so we could talk about Mike Sims-Walker.
Right, but – well, we'll talk about Mike, but it goes to the talking about Aaron Campman. And he's coming back, and I know everyone's, you know, his first game back, and, you know, is he going to solve the pass rush? Is he going to be that dominant guy? Well, it's going to take time before we know. I mean,
yeah, and you know,
it's going to take time for him to get that knee back. And
me and Tony kind of shared the same thoughts after watching Campman play in the game that, you know, it just wasn't very effective. And I didn't have an expectation that Aaron Campman would come back out and, you know, and just be a great player, the player that he was before. You know, he is, what is he, December or November 29th last year was when he had the knee reconstructed.
Right.
Yes.
So he's not quite 11 months. And I was telling
well, – he's basically 11. He'll be 11 months next week.
And so I told you guys before we came on here, I went through the ACL reconstruction. And if you watched me play at 11 months, you would have laughed. I mean, you would have been literally concerned – that I was ever going to be able to get back to the, you know, the old form that I had had. Not that it was a great form, but I didn't feel
effective
normal.
Form.
Effective form. I was back probably at effective form, I'd say 12 and a half months, and I started to feel myself at about 13 and a half months, you know, back to where I didn't
you
even
thinking
think,
about
I
it.
Wasn't even thinking about it. I was just reacting. So
and let's
just
be,
some thoughts on Campman's knee.
Yeah, and in fairness to any player, you know, and John brought up me being back in 8 months. Every guy's different. And it's not a toughness issue, by the way, either. It's a body issue. It's how you heal. It's how you can manage pain. It has nothing to do with toughness. It's just how everybody's body reacts differently.
We had a guy, Tony, in New York, and I don't know if you guys ever remember, Lonnie Young.
Remember the name.
Was a safety that we ended up acquiring for the New York Jets. We got him from the Arizona Cardinals. Big, hard-hitting safety. And to talk about how everybody's different, he actually had three of the ligaments in the knee torn at Buffalo. And he came back the next year, less than a year.
Fine.
And he played at a pretty high level.
Everybody's different. I mean, you know, so it's so dangerous and unfair.
Well, at 13
to make
months,
judgments.
At 13 months, what you're really talking about is it'll be next year before we see if Campman can return.
Well, I don't want to say next year, but I would think that, you know, my expectation is after seeing what I've seen so far that if we do see that Aaron Campman is going to be back to his old form, my expectation is
second
that
half of the season.
In December.
Okay.
You know, that's when you'd say, okay, you know, is he going to be okay going forward?
And here's the thing. Everybody's different, but age has something to do with it. Aaron's 31 years old.
Yes.
Second ACL and so in 2.5 years, I mean,
yeah, you just don't know.
You don't know. I mean, it's and I know Aaron. Listen, if anyone, Aaron's working as hard as anybody and trains and is going to take care of his body, and so you give him the benefit of the doubt that he'll be able to do it. But injuries, the body responds differently, and the older you get, the slower sometimes it takes to get back.
All right, so there you go. In case you were one of those people, Terrell Owens is back, but you will not look for him here.
I wouldn't touch him.
Yeah, I don't think that most people would, but. You know, you've got Drew Rosenhaus saying, hey, he could play on Sunday.
That's because Drew wants that. He's wants the feet.
That's the way.
That's his
remember,
job.
Remember, the NFL wouldn't exist without him.
Well, agents
just
are kind of like
to
that.
The 16 I mean, minutes
that,
interview.
That's not the second comment
that?
We've heard
I did.
By
but
an
I,
agent.
I don't feel like addressing that because I'll start saying things.
I know. That's
that
why
I
brought
regret,
it up to you.
And it's asinine. It's absolutely the most ridiculous comment I've ever heard that Drew Rosenhaus would say the NFL wouldn't exist. It would exist maybe better. I mean, maybe. Possibly. He's a very good at what he does. He takes care of his players. Nothing to do it. But the reality is, especially now, Drew, first rounders, I'm not sure they need you, buddy. They're slotted pretty much. What you get is what you get.
Do you know, I'm trying to decide right now if it was easier to get Vic lit up or Tony.
Probably me.
It's Tony.
Probably me.
By far.
I mean, but who, honestly,
I'm not going to say it, but here I go. I'm going to say it.
But honestly, who does that? Who gets into an interview and says, somebody, the NFL, who is the most successful league, which has been around, what, 90 years now, is doing pretty well, global, well, close to a $10 billion industry, and one agent who's existed for, who's been relevant maybe 10, 15 years, is going to tell us that without him, the game would not exist? There were, listen, Drew, there was Lee Steinberg before you that now is non-existent, and there was someone before
and
him.
And there was Jerry Maguire, too.
And there'll be someone after him.
Yeah.
And guess
help
what?
Help me.
And I thought we were wasting time with Terrell Owens.
Yeah, right, exactly. And
sorry.
We're moving on. We're moving on past
I apologize.
That one. No. It's my fault for bringing it up. I just wanted to get it out of the way. All right, we'll come back with a serious discussion, perhaps, about some topic, though I can't imagine what it would be, when we return. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. The mics come on and Buscelli goes silent.
It wasn't
for a
even,
moment.
I'll just say this in response. It wasn't even an option.
Okay.
People are going, huh?
Yeah,
I know,
right.
Sorry, I apologize.
That's right.
I had to get that out.
That's great radio.
Good
Tony.
Radio.
Great job.
Joe, thank you. Thank you. I got a thumbs up from Joe, so that's all I care about. We're on Jaguars radio, and that's all I care
it's
about.
It's the Italian brotherhood thing
Eat
going
wonder,
across
baby.
The table.
That's right, baby. Come on.
All right, so here we go. Mike Sims-Walker is back.
Chopper City Juke.
And everyone wants to know what you think about the Jaguars bringing him back. Now, I will say this. There's been a lot of criticism of Gene Smith. A lot. And that ridiculous story about David Garrard came out and his back. And then the Mike Sims-Walker thing, and I thought, you know, there's two examples of Gene Smith having made good decisions, and then an hour later I find out they bring him back. And the only thing I can think is...
No, it's still a good decision.
He's cheap, and he's motivated, and that makes it a good decision.
And you had to do something. It doesn't make the offseason a bad decision, because at that point you thought you were moving on, you thought you were moving forward. And at this point, I mean, you know, the receivers have caught about 600 yards worth of balls as a group.
They got to be better. And, you know, the only way you make a position better is that you make it more competitive, you know, where guys fight for playing time. And bringing a guy in that's going to be able to compete for playing time and compete for balls, I think, it's a good thing. Because right now there's no competition amongst that group.
Well, but that's a problem, Jeff.
No, I know that's a problem.
Forget the bringing anyone in. How about some personal pride? How about personal pride of fighting to be a better player and getting better and to be productive? I mean, just the entire – I mean, that statement alone – I mean, and I know you – I agree with you, by the way, but it's bothersome that that statement even exists, that you have to bring a guy in, my goodness, that we got rid of, that we didn't want, that got cut from the worst team in football, whose receivers might be worse than ours, and we're bringing – and that's going to cause them to be motivated?
I don't know if they didn't want him.
For the price.
But, you know, for what Mike wanted –
That's what I meant.
I mean, you had to say no. We just, you know, we're not interested at
for
that
your third
level.
Leading receiver. He was the third leading receiver last year.
You know, he was wanting big money, you know, and then he goes to free agency and he finds out that the big money's not there, you know, and so, you know, hopefully, you know, Mike comes back and he's ready to, you know, to play like he's in a contract year and kind of, you know, get back to where he thinks he can earn that kind of money that he was expecting after last year.
And I had never met Mike until today, and I talked to him for a while.
Good guy.
And, you know, he says the things that you want to hear a guy coming in say, and he basically knows that there's not many more opportunities left. You know, and, you know, this is the time that he has to get it done. So he's clearly motivated. And, again, I've never seen him, you know, play a whole lot in succession. I don't know what he's like.
The one thing,
he seems to be motivated.
John, the one thing that Mike Sims-Walker is very good at, he's going to catch a tough ball. Okay,
going
into the middle area, and he's a big guy, which
he's not afraid.
So, I mean, that's a positive.
Zero fear.
And that's something they need, frankly.
He's a good receiver playing against zone defense. He can find the hole. Where Mike, and I've said this for a couple years, where Mike
press
doesn't do well in is press or man coverage, and he has to get separation with speed and moves. But against zones, he's good.
The only thing that surprised me was philosophically, it's a move back. And that's what sort of surprised me, because usually Gene doesn't do that.
Well, Here's why.
Sure.
I mean, holy cow, Cecil Shorts.
Right.
You know, I mean, lights out in training camp, wowing us, going, holy cow, he looks like the best guy on the field at times, and then all of a sudden the regular season rolls around. He doesn't look productive.
Did he even play?
He doesn't look smooth. He doesn't look like he knows what he's doing at times. That's a problem.
Did he even play against Pittsburgh?
And with seven wide receivers on the active roster, something's going to happen.
Sure.
And so I think there's a big sign on that room that says production or gone.
Sure.
Pretty simple.
The only thing, I mean, I'm fine with it either way. I mean, you bring him back. I'm not sure I would have made the move to bring him back, because I think one thing it does do, I think it hampers some of the development of the younger guys. I mean, listen, if you're trying to get better at that position, I mean, it's the guys you've brought in to get them better. With that said, though, Jeff's right. We're not seeing any progression towards that end. And so what is it? It doesn't hurt. It's a veteran minimum. You know, bring him in, and if he can be a guy who can go over the middle and make a couple catches and make it, you know, because we need somebody to help out the rookie quarterback to give him some easy throws to make and actually catch the ball in the middle of the field.
I think you got an issue. You got a first-year receivers coach in that room too. That doesn't help. That you've got a guy. Todd Monken was here the last couple of years, and Munkin's an excellent coach, and now you're going to a first-year guy.
Well, that's a problem. But, I mean, that should have been a problem that we – didn't we recognize that going into the year? Young receivers, young receiver coach?
No, we didn't talk about it. People didn't talk about it because no one had seen Johnny Cox or knew what he was all about. So you give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, 6-7 games into it, you know, would you 600 yards receiving? I understand the rookie quarterback. But, I mean, we're talking about receivers dropping balls and not running crisp routes. And some blame's got to be assigned to the fact that you have a first-year receivers coach.
Well, and Jeff and I talked about it before the show. You watched some of the not very disciplined in the route running.
Needs to be crisper. Needs to have
explode
more speed,
out of the brakes. Yeah,
more quickness. You know, as a group, they are underperforming right now. And with a rookie quarterback, that's not what you need.
No,
ding.
You need some help. So, with that said, I guess why not? I mean, I guess the question is, I mean, would you have been better off? Because this is the other thing I hear out there all the time. Would you have been better off trading a 6th or 7th rounder and going to get Brandon Lloyd?
No.
You were quick with that.
I don't. I mean, I just
– led the NFL in catches, in yards last year.
The Broncos don't want him. Nobody he's ever been with
And that's what I've told people, too. I mean, it's not just the on-the-field, it's the off-the-field issues.
He's
– locker room.
He's always shown potential. And this is his 5th team, the Rams – and nobody's wanted to re-sign him, including the Broncos, who he played pretty well for. So, I mean, that's
red flags.
That's red flags. But I'm just saying, so you go look at these receivers. Do you go – I mean, Derek Mason was basically gotten for nothing. If he catches the ball, they get a 7th-round ball. I mean, they get a 7th-rounder at best if he shows production. Would you be better off going to get a guy like
he's,
as a veteran to bring some leadership into the room?
Yeah. All right, from that perspective, yeah, maybe.
So why wouldn't you – I'm just saying, what does Mike Sims-Walker add above Derek Mason?
I'm just looking at his numbers last year. I'm trying to remember
somebody's
his season.
Somebody's got familiarity with the offense. Yeah. He can step in
I agree with that.
Right
but,
away.
I mean, I'm just trying to throw out things. My whole point is, if you're doing it just to get some production, I'm fine with that. You're not getting any right now. But could you have gone out and getting a guy like a Derek Mason for nothing to bring leadership to the room? I mean, to change that up. I mean, how many guys in that room know how to be a professional? I mean, it's a young group, and that's not a knock against anybody in that room, but you have a young guys with a young receiver coach. I mean, maybe bring someone in there to teach them how to be a pro.
I guarantee you that is going to be priority number one.
In the offseason.
In the offseason.
You bet.
Like no doubt.
And 1A.
Like A++++++++++.
Before we break here for news, just a thought. Does anybody remember Mike Sims-Walker's signature moment last year in a Jaguars uniform? Off the top.
No.
Dallas. 8 catches, 153 yards, and the touchdown from David early on. That was David's big day.
Yeah.
You know, Mercedes had a big day that day as well.
I remember Derek Cox that day. That's what stuck out in my mind of that day.
Yeah, he had those 2 interceptions that day. And I remember that
pot roast.
I remember that he had 8 catches and a touchdown. I didn't remember the yardage total was 153. But he was still only the 3rd leading receiver here last year. We'll see.
Well, hey,
he adds
competition,
and he runs the slant route.
He runs the slant, which Jason Hill does not. But the other guy that's got to start stepping up. I mean, Mercedes Lewis.
Mercedes, too. Yeah. Mike Thomas, too.
I mean, Mike Thomas, Mercedes Lewis, those two guys right there have to elevate their play for a young quarterback. End of story.
And, Jeff, that was my point of what I said. I don't think Mike Sims-Walker fixes the issue. The issue is you need Mike Thomas and you need Mercedes Lewis. Those are two guys that you planned on being playmakers. And plan on being playmakers, by the way, for
You paid them both.
Several years. Those are the two guys that you need to step up. If we're counting on Mike Sims-Walker, nothing against Mike, to be coming in all of a sudden, light the room on fire and be the leader.
If he was capable of that, they would have kept with Sam
Bradford.
That's
my point. You need Mike the fix is Mike Thomas and Mercedes Lewis. That's the fix.
We take this break and come back after the news. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, and it's presented every Wednesday night by Aetna, only on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato. And the phone number 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351, at Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. And we roll along. We've covered the two big topics, Terrell Owens and Mike Sims-Walker. Now Monday Night Football in the Baltimore Ravens. You've done a couple Ravens games, haven't you?
Done one.
What do you think of them?
They're very good.
On both sides of the ball or just primarily on the defensive side?
They are tough, fast, mean, nasty on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
Besides that, they're very easy to go against. And offensively, they are above average.
Explosive.
They're good. Ray Rice is an absolute stud, whether he's running the ball or out of the backfield catching. Ed Dixon, the tight end, is very good, I think. He can run and catch the ball. Decent blocker. Receivers are guys, but they're explosive. They can run. They can stretch the field. I mean, but there's not one guy that you're going to be scared to death.
Well, I mean, I don't think Anquan Boldin puts the fear in anybody's
eyes. No, but he's a good option route
over the middle. Like a Wallace in Pittsburgh, but the guy I think that you've got to take account for is number 82.
Torrey Smith.
Their rookie from Maryland, who against the St. Louis Rams absolutely lit him up.
Well, he can run by anybody.
That's why you got to count for him.
No, I agree. But I'm saying they don't have a 80, 90 catch guy that's going to, you know.
Well, Anquan can be that type of player. But I mean,
yeah, but I think those days are beyond him. He's a possession guy.
But yeah, he's not going to catch it and go to the house. But I mean, 82, holy cow.
Yeah, he can fly. But I'll tell you the matchup that scares me if I'm with the Ravens is Ray Rice out of the backfield running the ball. And I think Ed Dixon creates all kinds of matchup problems because you can't put a linebacker on him. He's athletic enough, and he can run away from those guys. He's a big guy. And Joe Flacco is I don't think he's taking the next step like everyone thought he was going to, but he's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, but you can pressure him. You can make mistakes. The offensive line, I think you can beat McKinney, the right left tackle, with speed all day long. He's way overweight. He's heavy. But if he gets his hands on you, it's over.
This game has two probably unbelievably sexy matchups. Paul Posluszny versus Ray Rice.
Great matchup. Mm-hmm.
Ray Lewis versus Maurice Jones-Drew.
Great.
I mean, that's the headline of this game.
Ray can't run anymore, though, but he can still go – he can go tackle to tackle with anybody. If you can find a way matchup-wise, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do it because I don't know, you know, with the rookie quarterback and how much you want to expand the game plan, but if you can find a way to match up Ray Lewis in coverage.
Yeah, but the Ravens do a really good job of protecting
him. They do.
You know, when they play coverage, Ray's not really assigned to anybody.
But every once in a while, you can get him matched up outside
now and again,
you can expose
but
him.
It's not something that you can count on play in and play out because they're just not going to expose Ray.
I agree with that. But then, Ed Reed is the best safety.
You know where you beat him? I mean, if you go and you look at their games this year.
Not running at Haloti Ngata.
Well, no. If you're gonna beat him, you got to beat him at the corner spot. The corners are not particularly strong. And if you look at the Tennessee game, Hasselbeck had a heck of a day with 18. The guy on injury
Kenny
reserve
Britt.
Now, Kenny Britt. Britt.
Oh, right.
Kenny Britt and Matt Hasselbeck won that game for them. And if you can find a way to take advantage of the corners, and that's obviously a weakness for the Jaguars at the wide receiver position and a young quarterback. But if you can win some of those matchups, that would be big.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab Ronaldo from New Jersey. Hello, Ronaldo.
Hey, how you doing, guys? How y'all doing?
Good.
All right. Listen, I know we spoke earlier before, and I kind of called it out with the wide receiver before this season even started, when I said they blamed Gabbert starting and he didn't have any weapons. Now, we're getting Mike Sims-Walker back, and he you know, you said that he was the third leading receiver as far as that, but he still had more touchdowns than the whole receiving core over this whole team. Now, we look at it now and stuff, and also I believe last week you said that, mentioning talking about why we didn't get a receiver, and you mentioned like Braylon Edwards or something like that. Now, you say on a one-on-one.
Whoa, hold on. Who mentioned what with Braylon Edwards?
We said not to take him.
I said not to take him.
No, I didn't say take him. I said take him. But I going out to get a receiver, y'all mentioned one of the names that was named was Braylon Edwards. I mentioned Braylon Edwards. And when I said that is because, one, when you put him in a press, like you said, Mike Sims-Walker is not good at a press, but yeah, he's good in zone. Braylon Edwards was good at a press and good on a one-on-one.
Braylon Edwards thing.
Braylon Edwards has done nothing this year. Absolutely nothing. Not a zero, zilch. He's not a...
4 catches, 49 yards.
He's not even a factor for a 5-1 team.
No, I understand that.
Don't you think that, if they, you know, that Braylon Edwards was the savior of the wide receiver position, that he would have more than 4 catches on a good football team?
Well, if he had the chance at Jacksonville, considered with the other receivers,
what would change? What would change?
He would make a big change out of that.
I just have a question. What would change for Braylon Edwards if he was in a Jaguars uniform or a 49er uniform? What would change? Why all of a sudden would that 4 catches go to 20?
I could tell you.
Yeah, I'd love to know. Enlighten me, please.
All right. If Braylon Edwards, the difference between 49ers and Jacksonville is, one, the 49ers have Crabtree and a couple of other wide receivers that basically got the same status and already making starts that basically Braylon Edwards would be covered, like basically wouldn't get a start from there because you already got a star-studded or a better
star-studded?
Receiving as far. I'm talking about a better receiver.
49ers are star-studded? Do you realize Michael Crabtree had less catches last year than Mike Thomas?
No,
star-studded?
Yeah, yo, wait a minute. If you look at what Mike Thomas did last year, okay, considering to what Braylon Edwards did last year, Braylon Edwards did much better than Mike Thomas.
You're not listening because I didn't say that. I appreciate it, but you're wrong. I mean, you're wrong. It's okay. You can be wrong sometimes, and you're wrong.
All right. And with that, we'll move along.
3-5-5. Was I missing something, Logs? I mean, sometimes I get hard-headed. Did I miss something there?
Well, Braylon Edwards also has some issues hanging over his head that are unresolved. Yeah. I mean, he had
off
a league issue kind of hanging over his head.
And guess what happens if he gets in trouble one more time?
He's gone.
Yeah.
Which means bye-bye.
Risk. There's not a lot of risk with Mike Sims-Walker.
And there's not a lot of
even beyond
of
that,
risk.
The Braylon Edwards star has been falling for steadily.
Years.
For several years. I mean,
one Pro Bowl
he is not a guy
the
on the rise in any way, shape, or form.
Hey, this team is gonna fix their wide receiver position
draft.
In the draft
right.
And next year. It will happen. You know, we had this conversation before the game last week about, I mean, you look at what you have expectations for this team here and you compare it to a team like Baltimore. Compare it to a team like Pittsburgh. They've got years and years of roster building so that when they draft guys like a Torrey Smith,
you can develop them,
they don't have to have the expectations put onto them right away. I mean, this roster was so bad.
And the thing that people forget,
time.
Jeff, is you can't draft 5 guys in the first round every year. You can draft 1 guy in the first round unless you're lucky enough to have 2 picks. And I got an email this week talking about Gene Smith being stubborn about the wide receiver position. He won't take it early. And I wrote back and said he drafted tackle his first year, defensive line his second year, and quarterback his third year. Where were you going to take a receiver that made sense in the building process over those 3 spots on your football team? That is the correct way to build, line, quarterback. And I think next will be wide receiver. That's the process. That's how you go through it.
Jeff, is this different because Gene's here now? Because every time I hear somebody say, okay, we're going to draft a wide receiver, I think Reggie Williams and I think Matt Jones.
You have to draft the right one.
Okay, but why is that going to change? We haven't drafted two.
Hopefully it does.
But just because you've made a mistake at a spot before doesn't mean you can continue to ignore it. You've got to get the right guy. I mean, and
I can assure you that Reggie and Matt Jones
are not walking through this door again.
We're not Gene Smith's recommended picks in those drafts.
You can't be scared to take the spot just because it did not work out before. If it's the right pick, it's the right pick.
Go back to Baltimore, because
but I still believe that this group should be more productive than what they are now.
Yes, I agree. Going back to Baltimore, which led us to the wide receivers, you need to win outside because that's where the weakness of that defense is.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you have to do against Baltimore, you got to punch them back in the mouth. I mean, they're going to come out on this field Monday night, and they're going to strut their stuff. They're going to, you know, claim this. You know, they're going to be physical. They're going to get after you. They're going to push you around. They're going to be chirping. I mean, it is a good old-fashioned fight. And if you're the Jaguars, you have to make your mind up. Well, they didn't practice today. You have to make your mind up tomorrow that I'm going to prepare myself for this type of game. If I'm playing left tackle, whoever it's going to be, I know that I'm going to have Terrell Suggs out there, and he's going to be fired up, and I better punch him in the mouth because he's coming to punch me. And just line up matchup after matchup.
He's a fantastic player.
Very good player.
You know the stat that I read on him today that I didn't know? I mean, counting playoffs, and Brian, I don't know if you had a chance to get to that number yet, but you will, I'm sure. 22 games, the last 22 games, 20 sacks.
He's very good. But I've also watched him a lot.
Woo-hoo.
And I've watched when you can take him out. You have to go fight him. You have to make it a physical, nasty game where you're going through the whistle. And because he's going to make it chippy, and he's going to get after you. And he's going to – I mean, but it goes all the way down the line. That's the mentality you have to go in. So, yeah, you got to win outside, but you got to win – that battle as well to give yourself a chance to win this game.
All right, we need a break. We'll take it now. One more segment this hour. Jaguars This Week on Jaguars Radio. All right, rolling along towards the top of the hour in news from our friends at News Talk WOKV. Until then, Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio every Wednesday night. And let's grab Bill. Bill is on the south side this evening. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question was what was the difference between our run defense in the first quarter, basically, and the remainder of the game in the Pittsburgh game? It seemed to be such a dramatic turnaround. I don't understand the reason for the differential.
The biggest thing is when you play, you know, gap control defense, if you get one guy out of that gap, I mean, all of a sudden it can be a really big play. And the Jaguars got, you know, scorched a couple times early in that ball game, and in particular on their left side.
Looks like they lost leverage a couple times early.
Yeah, the leverage on the outside, and, you know, the Pittsburgh came out a couple times in a wing and a double wing where you had two tight ends outside of Heath Miller, and they lost their gaps, and bang, there it goes, you know. And
we started winning more up front.
You know, I mean, it's – I don't know. I don't know. It's the only way. I mean, you can't explain it any other way. I mean, it's, you know, in the second half, they cleaned it up and everybody fit better, and they basically shut them down in the second half.
Sometimes you start playing better.
You know? Yeah, I mean, listen, you give up 17 points on the road to that Pittsburgh team that just hung.
You should have a chance to win.
Yeah, you know, the scary thing about last week's performance, Bill, if you look at the Ravens, the thing that really jumps out at you is how they've started in a game. Looking at their scoring in the first quarter, they are a plus 57 point differential in the first quarter alone as a team. That is a phenomenal number. You know, and I don't know if, you know, at Pittsburgh, you know, you had the change at the last second there in the starting lineup. So, you know, was that a downer for this football team?
Oh, you mean on the Jaguars line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, hey, Evan Britton can't go, and, you know, we got to start Cameron Bradfield at left tackle, and we've got to –
who, by the way, played well.
Who played very well. We'll get to that in a minute. And Will Rackley had to be inserted left guard. You know, did that kind of suck a little life out of him at the beginning, thinking, you know, oh, no, you know, how are we going to do it when we got this going on? I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of Freud stuff that, you know, nobody really understands. And I don't even think
nobody really cares.
Freud was on drugs anyway.
Well, here's all you need to know. the Ravens –
that's a fact, by the way.
The Ravens.
You don't have to convince me, bro.
Fewest points allowed per game this year, 14.2. The quarterback, the opposing quarterback rating, 65.9, second worst in the National Football League. 4.5 yards per play, you know, fewest allowed. Number of turnovers per game, 2.8, most per game. I mean, this defense.
So you're saying they're pretty good.
What I'm saying is that Jeff's 57-point differential for the Ravens is because that defense is just, they stifle you. And here's the thing. You know, when we get the releases, and we get one every week, you guys all see them too. But for those of you who don't listen, we get a huge volume of information. And I never pay attention to the, you know, since 1995,
no,
the Titans. It doesn't, no. The players are different. But in this case, I do. Because the Ravens'
defense, yes,
in every major statistical category, and some, you know, relevant but not major categories, are either first or second for the last decade.
And guess who's the other team?
Pittsburgh.
The Steelers.
Pittsburgh. It's Pittsburgh Ravens in every category, yeah, for the last 10 years.
I mean, we're talking 11 seasons now.
Right.
Into its 11th season. The Steelers or the Ravens are either one or two in every statistic. That is
major, yeah,
phenomenal.
And now the Ravens are playing better defense this year than they did last year. They got a new defense coordinator in Chuck Pagano. They're more aggressive. They're playing very, very well. To me,
by the way, I was wondering what happened to their old defensive coordinator, Greg Madison.
He went back to college. He's,
that's your boy, Chuck Pagano.
Yeah, Chuck Pagano. I played for his dad in high school. I know Chuck well. But he went to Michigan's defense coordinator at Michigan.
Ah, okay. I was wondering why you would leave the Ravens. It must have been a really good gig.
I'm not sure. I don't know this for a fact, but reading stuff and trying to read between the lines, I'm not sure it was. It was a mutual parting of the ways.
Gotcha.
I think. I know that for sure, but I know that it was shocking to see a guy go from the defensive coordinator of the Ravens to the defensive coordinator of Michigan.
You know, Brian, you talk about the decade of defensive excellence in Baltimore.
It's awesome.
I mean, look at their coordinators. Marvin Lewis, yeah, you know.
Rex,
and then after
Ron.
Marvin,
good.
Rex. Mike Nolan, afterly between,
right, yeah,
Rex,
right,
and Marvin.
And then Greg Madison and now Chuck Pagano.
Yeah, I mean, they're rolling with it, you know.
And, of course, they've had some standards now. I mean, you look, Suggs has been there 9 years. Reed has been there 10 years. Ray Lewis has been
there's
there
16
years.
There's the key, though.
You know what the key is?
Ray sets the tempo.
You know what the key has been for this franchise? You go back to the 96 draft.
Ray Lewis.
Yeah. John Ogden.
Yep.
Pretty good picks.
Yeah. Both first-round picks.
So you wonder, you know, Ozzie Newsome, you know, who's been – you know, the man.
But look at his other
for the
first
Cleveland round. Browns and the Ravens. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Look at the other first rounders though on this defense. Terrell Suggs, first rounder. Haloti Ngata, first rounder. Ed Reed, first rounder. I mean,
that team
missed.
Is
you hit
right. And you think about the Jaguars in the early years, it hit with one notable exception in the first round, big time. If you hit in the first round, you're going to be okay.
What was that exception?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, hurts. You know, you look at Suggs. Suggs was the alternate choice for the Jaguars in 2003, right? You know, I mean, it's
let's not go back though.
I'm just looking back a little bit.
I had somebody ask me, you know, hey, the
I'm looking for their first round pick in 04.
You know, the Jaguars get Aluwalu and they get Gabbert, you know, but they're not drafting superstar players in the other rounds. And the truth is, if you hit in the first round year after year. You're going to have five or six super, you know, good players in your team at any one time. That's enough.
All right. We've hit the top of the hour. News is next, folks. We got another hour of this program. Jaguars This Week. It is presented by Aetna. It comes to you live from Everbank Field every Wednesday night. And it is only on Jaguars Radio. All right. Hour number two, Jaguars This Week. Sexton, Lagerman, Vaselli, Osher.
Yeah, me too.
Osher was on time today. That was nice.
Walked in before the music was started.
I was shocked.
Every once in a while, I'll throw you a bone.
That's earlier than some.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. Phone lines have been holding through the break, and we've got Eric in Philadelphia, of all places. Hello, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, Mr. Osher, I really appreciate what you do on jazz.com, me being from Philadelphia. I have the NFL ticket. So I watch every Jazz game, but, you know, not being in the Jacksonville area, what you do on the website and Jaguars This Week, how that's posted on the website, it really helps me out, you know, to follow the team more in depth. I really appreciate it.
Let's appreciate it. It's not just me, but I appreciate that.
Okay, and I'm sorry. I've been a Jags fan since I was little. I'm 23 years old now. I've been a Jags fan since 96, and I haven't been able to make a game, and I really want to do that sometime in the future. And I know, but it's really hard for me being from Philadelphia and seeing that the Eagles, you know, They, you know, the Eagles sell out every game, and it's waiting list. And it's really hard to see why the people in Jacksonville don't really buy tickets like that. It's really hard to comprehend. But I will make a game sometime in the near future. Now, I just wanted to make a comment about personnel. I was listening to the post-game show on Sunday after the game, and they asked Marco Coleman, it was a question about coaches and players, who was the fault for the loss. And I just wanted to, a couple plays, third and four, when we handed the ball to Deji Karim, you know, you can't really blame the play call, but I would like to see Maurice hand the ball off. And I don't know if you recall the play, third and one, where Troy Polamalu got hurt, where you hit Maurice Jones-Drew. The personnel that was in the game, they had Mike Thomas behind Mercedes Lewis. I believe it was Mike Thomas, I guess, was responsible for blocking Troy Polamalu.
Correct.
Wouldn't have been a better personnel decision to have maybe two tight ends on the field at that time, maybe Zach Potter, or, you know, a heavy line in the game at that time. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I don't think personnel matters in that instance. I mean, what they're asking of Mike Thomas on that third and short is just get in the way for a second.
Yeah, just get your head in front.
Maybe a fraction of a second.
All you have to do is get your head in front.
And his eyes were looking at the ball. And when you're in a wing, you can't look for the ball. You have to listen for the snap count. So you're moving and timing the snap because you know you've got 43 who's got very long hair and a black jersey across from you, yeah, who's one of the best in the league at timing the snap.
Yeah, especially that guy. I mean, there are guys you don't let out of your sight if you got them, and that's one of the guys.
I mean, dive and cut them.
Yeah, that's all you had to do is just slow them down for a fraction of a second. And the scary thing is that, you know what, if you go back and you look at that play, you got a franchise player that has another franchise player knifing at his knees, and he doesn't even see it coming until the last possible second. That could have been catastrophic.
Well, it hurt Troy's head. We know that.
By the way, Polamalu, loved the guy. He's awesome. And I showed that play on the smart board on Monday night's TV show, Jaguars All Access plug. And Polamalu was closing in on Maurice Jones-Drew on one play where he broke out. And you should have seen number 43 start to put on the brakes.
Really?
Yeah.
He caught him as opposed to deliver the blow. He caught him. We showed
it. He's probably thinking twice about the blow he delivered.
That was before that.
I know what I'm saying, but today he's thinking about it.
Yeah. It was one of the jackhammers in Jack's show that we showed today. And you don't even have to slow it down. You see him hit the brakes and catch Maurice rather than try to plow him down.
Well,
if it had been Greg Jones, he'd have really put on the brakes.
You needed to be to see that.
And then to answer Eric's other question about the third and four, third and five.
I had the same question during the broadcast. Remember I said a good play is one that works, a bad play that doesn't, but I wouldn't give Deji the ball and make him run inside on third and four against the Steelers. And I asked Jack about it, and last night he said on his show that he asked Ernest about it, and that was a play that Maurice came to the sideline, and Deji went in.
So, and we don't know why.
No.
We're not there.
No.
My only criticism of that, and actually watching the game, I thought the game plan was fine. There was plays to be made. I think Dirk and his staff did fine calling it. My only question would have been on that play, if I was having a conversation, you know, retrospect, it's 2020 afterwards. But if Maurice is out for whatever reason,
right,
and Deji's in, I think you have to go to the air. You gotta throw the ball at that point. In that situation with Deji,
Maurice rarely comes out of the ballgame, so there must have been a reason for him
to
do so.
And that would be my only critique of the – unfortunately, it was a big play at the end of the game. But other than that, there was plays to be made out there. I thought the two tackles played – I thought Cameron –
Yeah, how did – undrafted well. Grand Valley State.
Yeah, I thought Cameron –
Bradfield,
thank you, played well. Maybe exceptional if you think of the situation he's put in.
Tony, after the game, you know, we get a Bueller Switch watch to give to a player for being player of the game. And after the game, we were in the locker room trying to figure out who do we
Where
give this to.
Where would you go with it?
You know, after a loss like that, you know, it's kind of hard to find somebody. And I was sitting there thinking in the locker room, I'm going, you know what, I don't ever remember seeing Cameron Bradfield struggle in the game.
No, he didn't.
And so I gave it to him for being player of the game because here's a guy that woke up in the morning and went down to pregame meal and went to the stadium and
thought
said,
he's gonna be an
hey, guess what, you're starting today against Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, and he did a great job. And then after watching the game film, and Tony, you watched it today.
Yeah.
You know, and your left tackle, you know, I mean, you're harder than anybody on a left tackle. He played well.
I thought he played very well. I thought Now, you know, Harrison wasn't out there, which is, listen.
It helps.
That helps. But he had some good pass rushers out there.
Yeah, but he blocked the heck out of Brett Kiesel.
I thought, I was just going there. In the past, I thought he was fine. He tripped up one time early trying to get out and mix up. No big deal. But I thought he was very effective in the pass, very athletic looking, good use of hands. But what impressed me more than anything is in the run game when they asked him to base block Brett Kiesel, did an outstanding job.
Who's out. A strong man.
Very strong man. Very impressed with him and continue to be impressed with Guy Wimper. I think he continued. He blocked Woodley most of the day, a lot of one-on-ones. I think Woodley got one sack, but it was a cheap one. It was on a play action where, for some reason, we didn't block. The
Brock Bolin coming across.
Trying to
they
come
were expecting
across.
Him to – They were expecting
right.
Woodley to get sucked in on a play action.
And he didn't. He just came up the field. It's hard.
No.
It's a tough – I mean, that's a
but you know,
tough play. That was the only – but I thought the two tackles were not the issue.
Have they found guys there, Tony? I mean, are those two guys that you
– Yeah, I think Guy Wimper is a exceptional swing tackle mm-hmm. and a guy
and
that –
And a legitimate starter.
And a legitimate right tackle. And I told Jeff this off the air. Guy Wimper would have started for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's better than their tackle.
Well, better than both of them.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you don't know. Sometimes a guy comes in and plays. He plays okay. And other times a guy is a guy that you want to have to
right.
build around.
So I like Guy Wimper. And Cameron Bradfield, based on that one game,
something you can build on.
A lot you can build on.
355-NFL-1. Lee joins us from the west side next. Hello, Lee.
Good evening, guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I wonder if you would comment on something that we're starting to hear pretty much after every game now, and that's Coach Del Rio saying, hold me accountable for the mistakes, and these are repeated mistakes that we're making and time management problems. And I'm wondering what that means, and the reason I ask this is because, you know, this is painful for guys close to the organization to talk about, but you guys don't live in a bubble. You know that the sentiment of Jag fan has turned sharply against Coach Del Rio. Everybody expects him to be fired if they're not outright demanding it, and it's also turning on Gene Smith as well, because we look like we're headed for our worst season ever, possibly even worse than the expansion year.
Lee, you know what's amazing is that it always – first of all, you know, when you see a team doing bad, you know, first of all, it starts with the coordinator, then especially the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Then it goes to the head coach. And then after the head coach, it goes to the personnel guy. And you know what comes next? The radio broadcast team. And I'm serious. I'm serious. Remember a couple years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's just the nature of the business, and the head coach knows that.
There's a little blame in the ozone, too, by the way.
And you're terrible, too, John, now.
I'm
mean,
the worst.
Holy cow. You're
Team Teal's still strong, though.
Yeah, you know, Bacelli, your
Bacelli,
name's on the wall.
You're the same
so.
Thing. You know, and you know what? And now we get criticized for, you know, for being this, you know, media machine promoting this football team. Hey, my expectations for this team were legitimate at the beginning of the year. I expected them to compete for a division title.
Oh, mine too.
And to get to double-digit wins or close, you know?
And to answer Lee's question, you know, what's the accountability? Well, ultimately, the accountability is your job.
Yeah. And when Weaver made it clear.
I mean, that's ultimately all of our job. I mean, the
in January.
That's what you.
That you got to make the playoffs. Now, everyone wonders what Blaine Gabbert in the starting lineup means. But the Wolves are howling.
1-5 is not acceptable, I promise
no.
you that.
No, 1-6 isn't acceptable. 1-7 is not acceptable. I mean, there's no one in this building that's hiding from the fact that it is getting more and more and more difficult to stand up and explain it. And Lee,
well, it's unexplainable right now. There's
correct.
No excuse making. I mean, there's no explaining this away. You're 1-5. We're 1-5. We're a part of this. It's not good enough. If Jack was sitting here, he would tell you 1-5 is not good enough. Gene Smith's down the hallway working right now, studying personnel. If we could get him in here, he'd tell you 1-5 is not good enough.
Right.
And everybody knows you're accountable. And at the end of the day, you're accountable to Wayne Weaver, and Wayne Weaver will make a decision at some point whether who stays and who goes.
Look,
it's like Survivor. You either get voted off the island or you stay.
I spend 90 minutes every Tuesday night with the head coach. All right, he comes in here, does his radio show. Then we go across the hall and we work on his TV show that we taped today. So I spend another 45 minutes with him today. And then I also sit with Gene for about a half an hour on Tuesday afternoons. And I will tell you that both of them fully understand right now what is being said outside these walls. And both of them understand the pressure that they're under to try to change it. Gene Smith, I will say for you, I mean, he's a quiet-spoken guy anyway. But, I mean, he comes in here and you can tell. I mean, you don't even have to ask him. You can just tell. When they win, look, it's not like he comes in here with his great big cherubic smile on his face. He's a very serious guy. But last night, was it not obvious to you, Joe Fortunato? 5 losses in a row is dragging him down.
No question.
There's no doubt. And I've known Gene, like you guys have, since 1994 when he was a scout in the trailer. And
How many did we lose in a row in 97?
Seven is the longest losing streak in franchise history.
You know what, Tony?
That was awful.
I'll never forget.
Oh, it felt like 7 months.
It felt like seven years.
We had a practice back in 95, and John, you'll appreciate this. And I remember John Pease, the defensive line coach, just started yelling at us. I mean, ripping our rear ends up. I'm sick and tired of losing. This was right there during that. So I'm sick and tired of losing. And I just kind of, you know, we were running through this little bag drill, and he's like, all right, let's go. You know, and I'm just standing there, and I just got my hands on my hip. And I look at him. He's like, let's go. I'm like, you think we like this too? You really think that we like losing? You know, and what I wanted to say to John Pease at that time was, take a look around, big boy. Last time I checked, this is an expansion team, and guess what? We look like it.
There are some expansion players on that team.
Holy cow.
Good guys.
But here's, and do you remember that? Gosh, I wish we had the CBA like we did now. Because it wasn't the, you know, one pad of practice. It was full pads Wednesday, full pads Thursday, and we were in uppers on Friday.
Just full pads.
To kind of go back, me
and Tom had a discussion one Friday about, you know, because our full pads was knee pads, thigh pads, shoulder pads, helmets. You know, that's full pads. When you went to uppers, which Tom viewed it as a, you know, like a break for the football team. We'd put on girdles that didn't cover the knees, but you still had thigh pads on and shoulder pads and helmets on. So the only thing you virtually didn't have was a knee pad. And he was trying to say, you know, what's the matter? You don't like the pads for the day? I'm like, he goes, you know, I'm giving you a break going uppers. I said, what the hell are you talking about? The last time I checked, the only thing I'm not wearing from when I was wearing yesterday or any other full pad of practice was this little 4-inch knee pad, Tom. He didn't like that.
I have to tell you a quick story. In 1997, Vic and I did a show at a local steakhouse with Ben Coleman and Ty Halleck, two of your former teammates. And
Halleck, one of the funniest guys ever in the locker room.
So I'm standing there before we start the show, and Jeff Novak walks in. It was the week of
another funny one.
It was the
one of the all-times.
It was the rematch, if you remember, of the game against the Patriots here, right? I mean, it would be a rematch of the AFC title game that you had lost up there. And I said, hey, Jeff, how you doing? How was your week? And he looks at me with these bloodshot-looking eyes and says, I feel like I've played the game already.
Oh, it was,
and that was what he was talking about all week long.
It was brutal.
And just
it was
that
brutal.
Was the way you practiced.
I mean,
with him.
And so I the reason I asked, 5 games is a long time, because I'll never forget that 7-game losing streak. I felt like
terrible.
I wanted someone to put me out of my misery. Like
Detroit felt like about 4 games.
Oh my! Try playing it.
You want to
looking at the scoreboard? Please,
you know how like
call
like
timeouts.
People that do something wrong and they're coming out of the jailhouse and they put that whole sweatshirt over their head. You felt like walking in the stadium that way and then walking out and then hiding in your car to get home and then never leaving.
I mean, the all-time low is Detroit 44-0, and they're taking a knee in the third quarter, so they'll score more points.
Well, and you didn't have
Tom. I was fishing that day, by the way.
I was there.
Yeah,
and I was on the field every snap.
So was I, and Tom was so mad, he left the broadcast team, which couldn't not get our equipment down because we had to use a suite elevator. We had to wait for the suite holders to leave. He left us, and we had to fly home commercial.
I don't care what you had to do.
I was on the field
every snap in that stupid Silver Dome on that turf. Getting just abused.
Did I tell you I was fishing that day?
Thank you. And the best, and I'll do a quick story.
Reminisce here.
Real quick.
We got to take a break. Save it for after the break. We've got to get this break
in. I got
a
funny one.
I was listening to Sexton on the radio. I couldn't travel. Wouldn't let me travel.
Good for him.
I said, all right, I'll go fishing.
It was an awful day.
That was the worst game I've ever participated in.
The apex of the 7-game losing streak. 7:21, and we'll take this break and return on Jaguars Radio. All right. You want to tell the story, or now that you've told it off the air, so everyone's
left hanging?
It's
just a funny story, but we were getting beat, and one of the players had got benched the week before and was mad he got benched, and it was an offensive lineman, and someone got hurt, and so Tom told this guy to go in, and he said, I'm not going in. It was at the end of the game. We're getting beat, and it was this back and forth. As a rookie sitting there going,
Tony's going, oh, my God.
Where am I? Can I go home anytime soon? Because – we were losing 44-0, and we weren't going to win the game. And with the last fourth quarter, like, thinking we were going to come back, we're in 2 minute the entire time with a rookie quarterback, Rob Johnson, because Mark Brunell is hurt and Steve Berline got benched because he threw like 15 picks. And I'm sitting there as a rookie blocking Robert Prochet,
who was pretty good
the whole game, just going, this is not what I dreamed of when I said I wanted to play in the NFL.
Did I tell you I was fishing that day?
Yeah, you said you're fishing that day. So yep. I say all that because being in a losing streak like this is miserable.
Awful.
There's no, not terrible. It's just a miserable feeling. The only thing that fixes it is winning.
Well, we can all tell you. I mean, there's not a good question you can ask in the locker room.
No, and
a five-game losing streak is there.
I remember, you know, when I was covering the Colts, the guy who I covered him with from the Indianapolis Star, a guy named Mike Chappell, who's been covering the team forever. He used to talk about how it was to cover the Colts in '97, '98. They had a lot of losing streaks up there.
3-13.
And he always liked to say, he goes, "You don't want to ask the questions, and they don't want you here." There's nothing.
There's nothing
you're
to
covering
talk about.
It, whether you know. I asked Maurice Jones-Drew something this week, and I kind of prefaced it with saying, "Look, I know I asked you this last week, but," and he kind of smiled and he's like, because Maurice is classy, he knows he got a job to do, so he's going to answer the question. But there's nothing new to ask, to write, to talk about. You got to win.
And it started with the question about from Lee: Who's Jack accountable? Because he says after the game, yeah. Jack's accountable to the owner, and at the end of the day. The thing about the NFL, it's a performance business, and you're evaluated off of everything you do. And ultimately, now timing-wise, you're either asked to stay or asked to leave based on your performance.
All right. Now,
players and coaches.
ProFootballTalk.com, which almost everybody sees every day, they've got a picture of Jack on there, and they're talking about coaches on the hot seat, and everyone's trying to speculate, is Tony Sparano going to be the first coach to go? Is Jack Del Rio on that hot of a seat in Jacksonville? And nobody knows because there's only one person that makes that decision. And
well, especially in this building because it all comes down to
it all comes down
Mr.
to
Weaver.
Him. Absolutely. So the accountability is between Jack and Wayne, and Jack knows that. Gene knows it too. So there's the answer to the question.
That's the answer.
But, Lee, you probably didn't need us to tell you that. You probably knew that yourself. We all do.
Yeah, I mean.
Everyone knows that.
I don't think any of us in this room are going to be asked our opinion from Mr. Weaver whether we think Jack should be fired or hired.
Not at all. So everybody out here, you can call and you can ask the question. We can't give you an answer because we don't know.
No idea.
The reality of it is everybody knows how that decision will be made and who will be making it. And so we're riding it out.
And nothing will change.
Nothing.
Until
Wayne
you
Weaver
win
decides
or it gets so bad that Wayne says we're changing.
355.
At the end of the day, that's it. You either win or the change happens.
And it's that way in a lot of places.
No,
right
this isn't any indictment on Jack or anybody else here. That's how the NFL works. Tony Sparano.
Oh, yeah, he's hearing it now.
He's hearing it. Steve Spagnuolo in St. Louis has only been there 3 years.
Yep.
He's hearing it.
He is hearing it. He has met with the owner. The owner's told him what he's thought. And he either wins or he'll be shown the door and he'll be a defense coordinator somewhere else next year.
Right.
That's just how the NFL works.
So,
did you guys happen to see the back page of one of the New York tabloids, magazines with crybabies?
I didn't see that. Who are they talking about?
It was a picture of a baby on the back cover of the tabloids are all reserved for sports, pictures, headlines, and it said crybabies, and it was a picture of a baby with Rex's head superimposed on top of the baby. Because they lost, three in a row.
Three in a row.
And he was God there.
That's the way it is.
Heck, look at across the team they share the stadium with, the Giants.
Calling for Tom's head before the season even started.
And they're 4-2 now?
Yeah.
Leading the division.
And he's one loss away from
being back on the
hot seat of being fired. So if anybody thinks it's tough here.
Right. All right, we've reached the bottom of the hour. It's time for news again. 30 more minutes of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, when we return on Jaguars Radio. Hey, I just want to point out, I'm looking at Paul Kuharsky's blog. You read that on ESPN.com?
Sure.
The AFC South? And there's a story about Jim Caldwell and his job security.
There's another one.
He's in his
Did he go to the Super Bowl?
Hold on. Right.
I don't believe everything. Let me just say before you say what Kuharsky's sharing, I don't believe everything that Paul Kuharsky says because about 3 weeks ago, he wrote a little blip in there about how the Paul Posluszny is not performing that well for the Jaguars. Hey, Paul, watch the game before you write.
Okay.
That's a great point. If point he said made. That, my He's, goodness. Yeah,
all right, but he did an interview, and Caldwell was acknowledging that you do have, you know, moments where you worry about your job because there are people starting to question him up in Indianapolis. And the point I would make is this is his third season. He was 14-2 in year one.
2 years ago he went to the Super Bowl.
Went to the Super Bowl. 10-6 last year. And he's playing without Peyton Manning in his third season. He's 0-6, and people are calling for his head.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, he won't be there next year.
He won't?
Nah, he won't. I mean, and I like Jim a lot. I mean, out of the people on the Colts staff that I knew, I was probably closest with Jim.
You think he'll get fired?
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. If they're 4-12 or worse, unless there's major improvement, I would be very surprised. I'm not hearing that from anybody. I would just be surprised. And it's too bad because he's a good man. I think he's a better coach than people give him credit for. But
I just of all the coaches in the league, you never hear anything great about how good the Indianapolis coaches are. You know, Clyde Christensen. You don't hear but nothing but bad things about him.
Right.
Larry Coyer. I mean, I worked with Larry. You know,
okay.
I mean, good guy. But, you know, I mean, he's got some talent.
The time I was there, they had a few really good coaches. Tom Moore, Howard Mudd. Tierlink is a pretty good pass rush coach. And when Tony was there, they had three or four exceptional coaches, including him. But now it's not as strong a staff as it was, I wouldn't say.
No.
3-5 NFL one.
When Peyton Manning plays, it's a pretty good staff.
Yeah.
He makes a lot of staffs pretty good.
Well, I guess that, you know, just trying to round out the point for Lee, who called in the last half hour, and that is just simply that it's a bottom-line business. And it doesn't matter whether you're Jack Del Rio or Tony Sperano or Jim Caldwell, who was 24-8 in the regular season before this year.
And at 0-6, you can make a pretty strong argument. You know, you saw them play once.
They play hard.
They haven't quit on that.
No,
on that team.
I give them credit.
They may not win, but they haven't quit.
Not very good on offense.
Who are you talking about?
The Colts.
Yeah.
They play hard, though. They play extremely hard, and they're not very good on offense because they've missed on draft picks. Donald Brown's a
terrible.
Their offensive line is.
Is the draft pick the Colts got
injured?
He's not playing.
The offensive tackle's injured.
Okay. Got hurt. He's a pretty good player, though.
But back-to-back, they picked Jerry Hughes, Donald
Jerry
Brown.
Jerry Hughes can't play either.
Terrible. You know, and they're a case in point of how if you don't hit in the first round, gradually your
talent
playmaking
erodes.
Ability, your yeah. talent base erodes.
Yeah, but if you get the man, it makes it all look good.
And I think that shows you, we all knew he was good, but how good? His team was
been saying it for years now.
Yeah, if he
you
was,
take, you take Peyton Manning out of that organization in Indianapolis, they're a sub-500 team. Been saying it for a couple of years.
And even last year when they were 10-6, if they had not had a couple of key injuries at receiver, they're probably 12-4 and one of the favorites going to the playoffs. But without
Dallas Clark gone, and
without him, everything changes.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. At Tony Buscelli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. Any tweets of note? Kind of quiet. I mean,
quiet.
I think phones have been quiet. I mean, I think that's indicative of a 5-game losing streak.
Yeah, people are frustrated.
You bet.
Know? They in the first couple of weeks, in a losing streak, people are angry, and after a while, they're just like,
I think what people are feeling is, and we started the show talking about the Ravens and what a good football team they are, and that's just a fact. And I think people are looking at these next two games and saying, how do we avoid 1-7?
Well,
you know how people look at a schedule.
Oh yeah.
Win.
They look for. Oh, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win, that's a loss. And they, in their mind, they decide what a team should be, and we all know that doesn't work.
Well, there's also not a lot of mystery. The things that are not going right are the things that haven't been going right. So there's not a lot of new things to, why aren't they doing this? Well, we all sort of know what the problems are.
One good news is we are a top-10 defense.
Number 8.
Number 8. And they played exceptionally well in the second half last week, which gives you the sense that they can play well against this Ravens team.
And they're playing against a Ravens team that does not have...
My concern is not the Jaguars' defense.
He's not as good as the guy. I mean, their quarterback is not as good as Ben Roethlisberger.
You know, my concern
is not the
offense of the Ravens. It's the defense. I mean, I think this Jaguars' defense is prepared to play him. But you wonder how the Jaguars' offense, which is averaging
A touchdown game.
Yeah. How do you, you know, how do you beat them if you can't score?
Well, and Tony said earlier in the show, this is a Ravens team that, you know, wants to fight you. I think the Jaguars will fight. I mean, this is a team that will fight. And if it gets down to a street brawl, then I think they'll compete. But you wonder if they can make the plays. You know, so far they haven't made those plays to put competing into victory.
You know, in this game here, I mean, there's two guys that I'm going to watch real close in this ball game. 80, obviously, Mike Thomas, and 89.
Agree.
These two guys.
Mercedes has got to play better.
They got to step it up.
Why isn't he?
I don't know. But he's not. I mean, he is not playing at the Pro Bowl level that he played last year that made him one of the best
all
tight
right.
ends.
You've been around offenses that click. Is there a timing issue between he and Blaine Gabbert that hasn't been established
well,
yet?
It's not just the passing game. He's not blocking like he has in the past either. I mean,
a surprise.
He was dominant. I mean, he is a dominating blocker. That's his resume.
He has been, and I don't know if the calf that he had early in this year has affected him. But
Could that be a problem?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't. I mean, the only person that knows that is him. But
sure.
I mean, you would think. I mean, you're trying to latch on to something as an explanation why. I mean, as far as his drops, I mean, it's not like Mercedes has been the greatest receiver prior to last year. I mean, years prior to last year, I mean, he had moments where you go, gee, just catch the ball. You know, so, but the one thing that has been the constant with him is that he has been a dominant blocker. Needs to be better. You know, needs to be better. Not, you know, I think early in the season, I think they might have miscast him a little bit and that expected him to be that, you know, big-time receiving tight end. That's not what he is.
Right.
That's not what he is.
But he's a very good two-way guy in the sense of he's a very exceptional blocker when he's playing his style of game, and he's a good receiver. He's a big target. That last year he caught the ball. He made plays.
Was his game more tailored to what David did as compared to Blaine? I don't know. I didn't see him.
Quarterback doesn't matter.
No, okay. I mean, the ball, I mean.
No, I meant no. As a receiver.
No.
Okay.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab Henry, who joins us from St. Augustine. Henry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I just wanted to say to Mr. Pacelli that I'm a kind of an old guy, and I grew up in the Baltimore area with Gino Marchetti and Johnny Unitas and the old guys. And even watching them in the Super Bowls and before the Super Bowls, I've never seen a play like the time that you chase that guy down across the field.
Against Cincinnati here in 98.
It was unbelievable.
I appreciate that.
And the heart you showed, until the Jaguars can play with that kind of heart and that kind of, I don't even know what you call it. You just got to do it. And they're never going to have the team that you guys had with you and Brunell until they get some people that can play that way.
Well, Henry, I appreciate the very kind words. I believe this team will reach further heights than we ever did. I mean, I still believe we're going to win a Super Bowl here in this franchise, and they have the ability and they have the character on this team to play the same way that teams that Jeff and I were on together. But you got to go do it. You have to execute. And this is when it gets hard. It gets hard when you're losing. It's hard for everybody. And this is where, and we alluded to it earlier when we were talking about the receivers, where the personal pride comes in. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all professionals, and I know Jeff approached the game the same way because we played together. You want to win. That's the ultimate goal, that you want to win. But you also understand, as a professional, you're accountable to yourself and your teammates to go out and play hard. And I have not seen this team not play hard. I have not seen this team quit. I don't think there's guys laying down.
No.
I have not seen that at all.
Nope.
I turned on that tape against Pittsburgh. I saw great effort in the defense. Were there plays here or there that you'd like to be better? Yeah, but you could go turn on the tape when I played and see plays that I needed to play better.
You know, Tony,
and then I watched this offensive line in the tough position they're put in. I thought they played hard.
I mean, if you look at some of these games at the end of the game, You know, have you seen a team put together a four-minute offensive drive and just you know, and the Jaguars just go,
Well, if we could have got that stop, one first down earlier at the end of the game, that was frustrating.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean.
But still get, they still got it done.
No, you absolutely.
Know? So, I mean, I haven't seen to where this team has quit.
I have not either.
This team is not trying.
I don't think that's the issue.
But well, I've seen a lot of issues to where they need to be more productive.
Absolutely.
And more precise and execute better.
And
so I don't think it's a hard issue at all.
Because, Jeff, we talked about it. It would have been easy to quit down 17-0 in the second quarter the other day. And they actually
I won't even tell you, Osher, what I was thinking as I was sitting getting ready for the Tampa-New Orleans game when I saw it was 17-0. I'm like,
I was thinking 44-0
I was thinking the same thing.
You know, and,
well, yeah, when they had first and goal at the two.
Right.
Absolutely.
And they got a goal line stand at that point, and you didn't think much of it.
And that shows heart.
But all of a sudden in the second half, they played pretty well. You know, and the Steelers crowd was quiet. I mean, it was a shocking thing. Now, you can't emphasize that because you still lost.
You lost.
Still 1-5. Everything still stinks.
Still gave 17 points up on the first three drives.
Sure. And there's a lot of negatives. But we were
talking
about
heart. Is not one of them.
And I think heart is something that you show in that situation. So to their credit, at least on that one point, they did show heart.
And I'll go back to one of the guys we've talked about. You go watch Maurice Jones-Drew play. There's no lack of heart watching that guy run the football on a 1-5 team. Go watch Paul Polzuzny play. There's no lack of heart on that guy on a 1-5 ball club when he goes and tackles it. I mean, he's not hiding or shying away from contact. And those are just two guys. I can go down the list. Watch Darryl Smith play at a very high level of football right now. I mean, you can go through the list. Now, there are guys that you can also turn on the film that need to play a heck of a lot better.
Yep.
I'm not questioning their heart. I'm questioning their execution, their desire, their ability maybe, their preparation. They need to play better. So I'm not trying to sugarcoat this and let's all, you know, hand out orange slices and everyone gets a trophy at the end of the day because, you know, this is some sort of like Little League game. No, there's guys who have to play better, but I'm not ready to question anyone's effort or heart.
All right, let's take a break. Our final one of the evening. We'll come back. Phone lines are exploding. We'll try to work some of those in and wrap up the week on Jaguars This Week here on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls along towards the top of the hour. Let's grab one caller here, and we'll make it Patrick in Fernandina Beach. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I had a question about how you felt with Mike Sims-Walker, re-signing him, and why we didn't go after Brandon Lloyd.
We talked about that at the beginning of the show. If you want to go back and listen to it.
And real quick, podcast. Because Mike Sims-Walker was no draft pick, he was minimum. And Brandon Lloyd probably more to the story than meets the eye, and there's issues when teams were ready to get rid of the leading receiver in the NFL last year.
There you go. Appreciate the phone call. And in the final 4 minutes, we talk about some of the games around the National Football League this weekend. Washington at Carolina. Not a whole lot to really say about that one.
Yeah, Cam Newton. John Beck. Rex Grossman project's over.
Yeah, like I said, not a lot to say about
that
one.
Okay, fair enough.
Seattle's at Cleveland. I think that's in the same category. You're going to Detroit to watch Atlanta.
Yeah, Detroit-Atlanta. I cannot wait for that game. I think it's a great
game.
I think Atlanta is reeling a little bit. They better keep pace. They're already one game back behind the Saints
division.
And Tampa Bay. I think both those teams are probably better than Atlanta right now.
And they've had a tough schedule, and they're losing to teams that are better than they are.
They are losing exactly right, and I don't know if they got the firepower to go up into Detroit and beat a team that's going to be coming off pretty ticked off after losing a tough one to San Francisco.
I hope Smitty shakes his hand after the game real physical.
I don't see that.
I'm going to look for Smitty. And
hey, great game.
See if I can encourage a fight.
Hey, I almost feel like we should save this for last, but Denver at Miami.
Tebow time.
That's right, baby.
Oh, Denver win all the way.
Denver's going to win because Miami's terrible.
No, they're going to win because Tim Tebow's a quarterback, dude.
Oh, well, either way, Miami's terrible. So, and the biggest story there, obviously, is Tebow playing, but also, how do you feel if you're a Miami fan and they're honoring the Florida Gator national title team and the opposing quarterback is going to be honored, and you live in Miami, and doesn't the University of Miami share that stadium, too?
They do.
Yeah. I mean, interesting.
It's a little funny.
All right. San Diego at the New York Jets.
Good game.
After losing
great
three in
game.
A row,
San Diego, probably the best team nobody's even watched or heard about.
Yeah.
I've watched them. I don't know if they're as good as everyone thinks they are.
No, but they're good.
But they're winning early, and they never win early.
But go look at the combined record
yeah,
of the teams they've beaten. they only have 2 wins and like 16 losses. They're two. I mean, they have not beat the one team they've lost to is the Patriots, and they're barely beating really bad teams.
The Raiders may surprise everybody and win that division.
Yeah, I think the Raiders might be better, and it'll be very interesting to see how they handle the only the second good team they've played on their schedule, which is the Jets.
All right, hold off on the Raiders because we're coming up to them. Chicago's at Tampa Bay. Actually, it's in London. Here's one that we all are interested in: Houston at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Houston is 3-3. And Tennessee's coming
three
up the bye. They're 3-2.
I actually watched both of them teams, Houston and Tennessee, in the last couple weeks on film because shared common opponents with the Jaguars. Tennessee's, I mean, playing real smart, close to the vest. Hasselbeck's doing a pretty decent job. Defense is playing well for Tennessee. That's probably the most surprising
thing. No Andre Johnson, no Mario Williams.
Yeah, but you know what? Houston was doing a pretty good job against Baltimore up until late in that ballgame. You know, even without those two guys, and defensively, you know, Mario Williams is a big hit, but they're still productive.
They might be able to put someone out there who's actually better at playing outside linebacker than Mario Williams.
Maybe,
is.
But not the pass rusher.
Right.
Pittsburgh's at Arizona. Then we come to Kansas City at Oakland. And the thought that Carson Palmer might come off the bench.
Pretty amazing.
The 9-month bench, right? Because he hasn't.
Well, but it's the offense he knows. It's Hugh Jackson's offense.
Hey, Mike Brown of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Did he just, get all he wanted and more.
I can't believe they're willing to give up 2 first-rounders possibly.
Possibly, yeah.
And remember, they don't have a GM, so the coach made that decision.
The Raiders coach.
Which is the sort of decision a coach makes.
Yeah, but you know what, though, John? Isn't that something that Al Davis would have done? I mean, that's kind of an Al Davis thing.
And here's the thing. If you look at it from the Oakland side, if Carson Palmer is the 25 to 30 touchdown guy he is, 15 to 20 picks, that's what he is in his career, they have a lot of talent on that team.
Sure.
They have their running back. They're loaded at wide receiver talent-wise. They got a decent offensive line. They're very good on defense.
And you never know.
And you get to the AFC Championship, you have a chance to go to the Super Bowl, then it's worth the 2 firsts.
Here's the interesting part. The Raiders have given up 2012 draft choices now for Carson Palmer, for Jason Campbell, because they had a pick that was attached to 2012 for him, and Terrell Pryor. They have 2 picks next year, a 5th-round and a 6th-round pick. And, I mean, look, if Palmer takes him to the Super Bowl, you don't even worry about that.
Well,
next
if he even
year.
Takes you deep into the playoffs, who cares?
Well, the only problem is
you
that you're giving away your
giving
future.
Away
you're giving away. And we've seen what it's meant to the Jaguars.
If you go deep in the playoffs, you've lost 2 first-round picks. Then you're going, it wasn't worth it unless we won it.
Yep.
Right.
Two first-round picks.
I agree.
You better make the whole thing.
I thought it was a steep price.
The whole thing work for that. And now the flip side is Cincinnati. Holy cow. You know, they already
are they going to draft the right guys, though?
Well, that's the question because Mike Brown doesn't have that full scouting department.
They did a good job last year. A.J. Green, Andy Dalton, pretty good.
You could ignore the rest of them.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
You
got your quarterback and your number one receiver.
Yeah, so now you can focus on getting big guys.
Pretty good.
What else have we got? St. Louis at Dallas. Green Bay at Minnesota. Indianapolis.
Christian Ponder starting his first game.
Indianapolis at New Orleans.
New Orleans is going to run them out of that building, and they are upset. They're mad. They lost the game. They feel like they should have won against Tampa Bay.
Sean Payton from the booth, baby.
Sean Payton with his knee. That was ugly.
You saw it? How'd it happen? I haven't even seen it.
Jimmy Graham, the big tight end, got tackled out of bounds. Sean was standing there, didn't move, and got hit with a straight leg. His legs were straight, got hit, and his knee went backwards.
Oh.
Yeah, had to have a surgery, broken leg, coached the rest of the game from the bench, you know, and everybody's going, he's a tough guy.
First half from the bench, second half in the booth.
Yeah, if everybody's saying tough guy, I'm sitting there going, what's the big deal with that? All he had to do was coach.
Just sat there.
Perspective.
Try playing with that thing.
Perspective, folks.
Yeah, who's the guy that played with a broken leg way back in the day? Jack Youngblood.
Yep.
Peyton, you ain't got nothing on Jack.
Absolutely. All right. I was going to say that. All right, folks, have a great night.